Las reuniones en casa ya no tienen ninguna restricción desde ayer sábado 12 de febrero, aunque Salud Pública recomienda tener como máximo a 10 personas presentes o residentes de tres hogares.
Además, los restaurantes pueden acoger un máximo de 10 personas por mesa a partir de ayer sábado. Hasta antes solo se permitía que cuatro personas o dos familias se sentaran juntas en un restaurante.
Los encuentros deportivos organizados como el hockey podrán reanudarse a partir de mañana, lunes 14 de febrero. Los gimnasios y spa, como ya se había anunciado, también podrán abrir en esa fecha. Sin embargo, los torneos solo podrán reanudarse 2 semanas después, el 28 de febrero.
A partir del 21 de febrero, todos los comercios minoristas podrán reabrir a pleno rendimiento. Los lugares de culto permanecerán al 50% de su capacidad, pero con un máximo de 500 personas.
A partir del 28 de febrero, el trabajo desde casa dejará de ser obligatorio para quienes tengan empleos en los que sea posible. Los grandes recintos como el Bell Centre de Montreal podrán funcionar al 50% de su capacidad.
Los bares que llevan cerrados desde el 20 de diciembre también podrán reabrir a partir del 28 de febrero. Tendrán que funcionar al 50% de su capacidad con una última llamada para el alcohol a medianoche y una hora de cierre a la 1 de la madrugada.
También a partir del 14 de marzo, los restaurantes, bares y grandes locales como el Centro Bell y el Videotron Central podrán funcionar a pleno rendimiento.
El ministro de Salud, Christian Dubé, dijo que no hay planes para levantar la obligación de usar mascarillas ni el pasaporte de vacunas de la provincia, aunque la medida se podrá revisar el 14 de marzo.
Dubé no proporcionó un calendario para cuando el pasaporte de vacunas requiera una tercera dosis, como se había anunciado anteriormente. Legault dijo que el 63% de los adultos de la provincia han recibido una tercera dosis de la vacuna COVID-19. Lo importante es que las personas que aún no lo han hecho reciban esa dosis de refuerzo a la brevedad. Solo de esa manera se mantendrán los contagios a la baja. Si no, habrá que restablecer medidas restrictivas, lo que nadie quiere.
Muy bien, y vamos ahora entonces a un nuevo tema musical.
Tú sabes muy bien que yo te quiero. Sabes que eres mi pasión. Tengo para darte a ti un inmenso corazón, pero tú no estás. Si me quieres bien, perdóname. Si me quieres bien, comprenderás que el amor que ayer no fue, hoy te pido a ti volver para mí, solo para mí. Yo te espero siempre, amor de mi vida. Y en las noches yo me pongo a pensar. Yo te espero siempre, amor de mi vida. Y en las noches yo me pongo a pensar. Si volvieras tú a mi lado, para revivir mi pobre corazón. Volveré a cantar mi amor solamente para ti, porque tú ya estás en mí, porque tú ya estás en mí, porque tú ya estás en mí.
La revista de la semana. Elecciones presidenciales en Costa Rica. Estabilidad, pero incertidumbre económica. Tanto para observadores latinoamericanos como para aquellos que ven el continente desde afuera, el caso de Costa Rica, un país ubicado en Centroamérica entre Nicaragua y Panamá, es de gran interés en virtud de un factor muy interesante. Desde 1948, cuando hubo un conflicto armado interno, este país ha sido el primero en América Latina en eliminar sus fuerzas armadas. Hace algún tiempo, la expresidenta del país, Laura Chinchilla, recordaba este hecho, que es sin duda un tanto curioso en un continente donde la presencia militar y sobre todo el peso de los militares en la conducción política de esos países ha sido una característica prácticamente desde los tiempos de su formación como estados independientes en el siglo XIX. La expresidenta Chinchilla aludía a cómo no contar con fuerzas armadas ha permitido al país orientar sus prioridades hacia la educación y otros programas sociales, siempre, por cierto, dentro de las limitaciones propias de un país con ingresos también relativamente pequeños. Aún así, ha sido un hecho remarcable que se ha traducido además en ser el país con la más larga estabilidad política e institucional en América Latina. Remarcábamos todo esto porque el pasado domingo hubo elecciones en este país y, como ninguno de los postulantes obtuvo el requerido 50% más uno de las preferencias, los que se ubicaron en los dos primeros puestos disputarán la presidencia en una segunda vuelta el 3 de abril. José María Figueres, del Partido Liberación Nacional, y Rodrigo Chávez, del Partido Social Democrático, son los finalistas para esa contienda. Figueres, por cierto, es hijo de José Figueres Ferrer, figura emblemática de la historia costarricense del siglo XX, ya que fue él quien lideró el movimiento que en plena guerra civil llevó en 1948 a la histórica eliminación del ejército. Figueres ya ocupó la presidencia entre 1994 y 1998. Chávez, por su parte, fue ministro de Hacienda en el saliente gobierno conservador de Carlos Alvarado. Si bien destacábamos la estabilidad política costarricense, no puede, sin embargo, decirse lo mismo de la economía del país. A los naturales efectos de la pandemia que ha golpeado a prácticamente todos los países del mundo, se agregan problemas de manejo interno, baja en la demanda de las exportaciones, principalmente productos agrícolas, y en el turismo. Todo eso agravado por una corrupción administrativa que ha afectado el crecimiento y la inversión. Quienes se van a enfrentar en la segunda vuelta representan proyectos con aparentes diferencias, aunque también hay que matizarlas, si se tiene presente otros antecedentes. Liberación Nacional, el partido del candidato Figueres, es básicamente el Partido Socialdemócrata Costarricense, por lo que el nombre del otro, el partido de Chávez, Socialdemocrático, es un poco desorientador. Este último es más bien un partido de derecha. Sin embargo, y en esto no hay que hacerse ilusiones, aunque probablemente el electorado de los candidatos que en primera vuelta votaron por la izquierda no tendrán otra opción que darle el voto al abanderado de Liberación Nacional, a Figueres, cuando fue presidente, no le costó mucho adoptar posiciones neoliberales. Dio luz verde a la liberalización bancaria, redujo el gasto fiscal mediante cortes a servicios sociales e instauró una muy poco cuestionada, una más bien muy largamente cuestionada reforma previsional. Todo esto mermó su popularidad durante ese primer mandato presidencial. Él también se vio envuelto en un sonado incidente de corrupción conocido como el caso ICE-Alcatel. Según denunciaron medios costarricenses, Figueres habría recibido $900,000 de la compañía francesa Alcatel, señalada de sobornar a varios políticos y funcionarios costarricenses en varios gobiernos. Chávez, por su parte, también trae consigo un bagaje cuestionable. Este exministro enfrenta acusaciones de acoso sexual que él ha intentado desechar, llamándolas simples chismes. En las elecciones del domingo, los costarricenses también eligieron un nuevo parlamento, el que resultó muy fragmentado. Según analistas, y aquí cito, los comicios del domingo se caracterizaron por el desánimo de la población en medio de los problemas económicos que golpean al país y acusaciones de corrupción, lo que se tradujo en el abstencionismo más alto de la historia del país. Cierre comillas. Bueno, en efecto, alrededor de un 40% del electorado no se presentó a las urnas. En este panorama, entonces, los costarricenses aún pueden estar orgullosos por su estabilidad política y el hecho de haber sido los primeros en América Latina en deshacerse del alto costo de mantener una fuerza militar. Pero aún le quedan otras trabas que superar y más que nunca ahora, cualquiera gane en la segunda vuelta, solo una movilización de los trabajadores y sus aliados y los sectores progresistas de la sociedad podrán garantizar que el gobierno responda a los intereses de las grandes mayorías. The Weekly Review. Presidential elections in Costa Rica, stability but economic uncertainty. Both for Latin American observers and for those who see the continent from the outside, the case of Costa Rica, a country located in Central America between Nicaragua and Panama, is of great interest due to a very interesting factor. Since 1948, when there was an internal armed conflict, this country has been the first in Latin America to eliminate its armed forces. Some time ago, the former president of the country, Laura Chinchilla, recalled this fact, which is undoubtedly somewhat curious in a continent where the military presence and, above all, the weight of the military in the political leadership of those countries has been a characteristic practically since the time of their formation as independent states in the 19th century. Former President Chinchilla alluded to how not having the armed forces has allowed the country to focus its priorities on education and other social programs, always, of course, within the limitations of a country with a relatively small income. Even so, it has been a remarkable fact that has also resulted in being the country with the longest political and institutional stability in Latin America. We were mentioning all this because last Sunday there were elections in this country and, as none of the candidates obtained the required 50% plus one of the preferences, those who placed in the first and two positions will dispute the presidency in a runoff election on April 3rd. José María Figueres of the National Liberation Party and Rodrigo Chávez of the Social Democratic Party are the finalists for that contest. Figueres, by the way, is the son of José Figueres Ferrer, an emblematic figure of Costa Rican history in the 20th century, since it was he who led the movement that in 1948 in the middle of a civil war led to the historic elimination of the army. Figueres was president between 1994 and 1998, while Chavez was Minister of Finance in the outgoing conservative government of Carlos Alvarado. While we highlighted Costa Rica's political stability, the same cannot be said of the country's economy. To the natural effects of the pandemic that has hit practically all countries in the world, we can add internal management problems, low demand for exports, mainly agricultural products, and tourism. All of this aggravated by administrative corruption that has affected growth and investment. Those who will face each other in the second round represent projects with apparent differences, although they must also be nuanced. If other background factors are taken into account, so we'll see that perhaps the differences are not that big. Liberación Nacional, the party of candidate Figueres, is basically the Costa Rican Social Democratic Party. So the name of the other party, the Social Democratic Party of Chavez, is a bit misleading. The latter is more of a right-wing party. However, and here we should have no illusions, although probably the electorate of the candidates who voted for the left in the first round will have no choice but to vote for the National Liberation candidate, when Figueres was president, he had no trouble adopting neoliberal positions. He gave the green light to bank liberalization, reduced fiscal spending through cuts to social services, and instituted a highly questioned pension reform. All this dented his popularity during his first presidential term. He was also involved in a notorious corruption incident known as the ICE Alcatel case. According to Costa Rican media, Figueres allegedly received $900,000 from the French company Alcatel, accused of bribing several Costa Rican politicians and officials in various governments. Chavez, on the other hand, also brings with him a questionable background. This former minister faces accusations of sexual harassment, which he had tried to dismiss as simply gospel. In Sunday's elections, Costa Ricans also elected a new parliament, which turned out to be very fragmented. According to analysts, Sunday's elections were characterized by the discouragement of the population in the midst of the economic problems hitting the country and accusations of corruption, which resulted in the highest abstention rate in the country's history. Indeed, about 40% of the electorate did not show up at the polls. In this scenario, then, Costa Ricans can still be proud of their political stability and the fact that they were the first in Latin America to get rid of the high cost of maintaining a military force. But there are still other hurdles to overcome. And more than ever now, whoever wins in the second round, only a mobilization of workers and their allies can guarantee that the government responds to the interest of the majorities. Good day.
¿Quién pudiera saber amar con las manos llenas? ¿Quién pudiera saber amar contra la tristeza? De todo sobre volar, alejar de su lado todo el mal. ¿Quién pudiera saber amar sin rendirse cuentas? ¿Quién pudiera saber amar sin notarlo espalda a los demás? la mente abierta. ¿Quién pudiera saber amar cuando esté de vuelta? No, no me da miedo la libertad, mas no quiero enfermarme de soledad. Siempre comienza igual, cualquier pretexto puede bastar, cualquier situación nos sirve para recomenzar. Luego sientes la piel correr desnuda al encuentro de él, como vuelve el perro donde le echa de comer, como vuelve el perro a donde le echa de comer.
Y en el fichero latino de hoy, 13 de febrero, tenemos entre los anuncios de interés público, concierto Más Allá del Rojo, esto es hoy domingo 13 de febrero a las 19:30 horas. Este concierto que reúne al dúo Stick and Bone y al Sesteto Ensemble para Mirabeau marca el 60 cumpleaños del compositor Luis Naón. Para mayor información pueden ir al sitio de internet Más Allá del Rojo, dos puntos, Triptych d'Argentine, Web Diffusion.
Bien, y dosis de refuerzo de la vacuna contra el COVID-19. Están abiertas las inscripciones para vacunarse con la tercera dosis a las personas que tengan 18 años y más. Las dos primeras dosis ya están también disponibles para los niños entre 5 y 12 años. Consultar y reservar en línea en el sitio web Clic Santé en francés e inglés.
En la sección publicaciones tenemos L'édition française du livre Présent Chilien dans la Belle Provence est maintenant disponible à la librairie de l'Université de Montréal, c'est-à-dire dans le 3200 de la rue Bruyante, à la librairie Bertrand aussi, dans le 430 Saint-Pierre, Vieux-Montréal, et en ligne sur le site internet de la compagnie Renoblet au prix de 10 dollars plus taxes.
The book Chilean Presence in La Belle Provence, English version of the book Presencia Chilena en La Belle Provence, written by Sergio Martinez and Roberto Hervas, is already on sale at Argos Bookstore, located at 1841A St. Catherine West, and Paragraph Bookstore on 2220 McGill College Avenue. Price $10 plus tax.
Edición inglesa del libro Presencia Chilena en La Belle Provence, escrito por Sergio Martínez y Roberto Orbaz, ya está a la venta en la librería Argos, en el 1841A de Saint-Catherine Oeste, y en la librería Paragraph, esto es en el 1220 de McGill College Avenue. El precio es de $10 más impuestos.
Y el tiempo para hoy, según Environment Canada, la Oficina Meteorológica Nacional de Canadá. Soleado con una temperatura máxima de menos 13 grados. Para esta noche, despejado con una mínima de menos 19 grados.
Y recuerde que si usted o su organismo comunitario tienen alguna información que deseen difundir en el fichero latino, solo tienen que comunicarse con nosotros a Latin Time a nuestra dirección electrónica, que es laplaza.info@gmail.com.
O también puede enviarnos un mensaje en Facebook. Vaya a www.facebook.com/tiempolatino.latintime y de paso denos un like. Nuestra página Facebook también se actualiza ahora diariamente con noticias y reportajes sobre lo que ocurre en América Latina y el mundo. Síganos en Facebook.
Tiempo Latino es escuchado en América Latina y en todo el mundo a través del internet. Entre al sitio de CKUTET en la siguiente dirección, www.ckut.ca.
Y usted puede acceder también a nuestro programa en cualquier otro horario, simplemente yendo al archivo de CKUT en el sitio web ya indicado, presionando Latin Time.
Un feliz día de San Valentín a todos nuestros oyentes.
and a happy Valentine's Day to all our listeners.
Era magnífico aquel tiempo, qué hermoso era cuando estábamos unidos perfectamente. Al lugar y las personas que habíamos elegido antes de nacer. Tu corazón es como una piedra cubierta de musgo, nada la corrompe. Y tu cuerpo es columna de fuego que siempre arde y hace que arda. Mis brazos se han rendido fácilmente y tus huesos no sienten el dolor. Los minerales de los que estamos compuestos vuelven, retornan al agua. Sonido de campanas lejano, irresistible, el reclamo que invita a la plegaria de la tarde. Gentil es el espejo. Miro y veo que mi alma tiene un rostro. Te saludo, divinidad de mi tierra. El reclamo me invita. Tu corazón es como una piedra cubierta de musgo, nada la corrompe. Tu cuerpo es columna de fuego que siempre arde y hace que arda. Sonido de campanas lejano, irresistible, el reclamo que invita a la plegaria de la tarde. Campanas, lejano, irresistible, el reclamo que invita a la plegaria de la tarde.
Y esto ha sido todo por hoy. Tiempo Latino es una producción del Taller Latinoamericano de Comunicaciones.
Latin Time is a Latin American Communications Workshop production.
Estuvimos hoy con ustedes.
Our team today.
Daniel Lara y Sergio Martínez en las voces.
Sergio Martínez and Daniel Lara at the mics.
Y Rommel Cajavilca en la producción técnica, la compaginación y la selección musical.
And Rommel Cajavilca in the technical production, edition and music selection.
Manténgase en la sintonía de CKUT, nuestro próximo programa de International Radio Report.
Stay tuned to CKUT, next the International Radio Report.
Tengan todos ustedes un feliz domingo.
This is Gregory Majewski of Oakdale, Connecticut. You're listening to International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Welcome to the International Radio Report on Sunday, February the 13th. My name is Sheldon. I am here with Jill. We thank you for joining us. It is our 30-minute visit with you on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. We have an email address for you, radioreport@yahoo.com, if you'd like to communicate with us. Our show is live streaming and archived at ckut.ca. Our Facebook group, International Radio Report, has 713 members. We welcome Gabrielle and Mohammed to the group this week. And our YouTube channel, where you can go and catch the show at your convenience. It is youtube.com/International Radio Report, and we have 576 subscribers there. Lots of information out there on the Facebook for you. We do have some special programs on the YouTube channel as well that you might like to check out, programs that don't make it onto the regular show on CKUT. We have a lot of information to get to this week, so we'll get right into it. We are getting closer and closer to the 35th annual NASWA Winter SWL Festival. We've been telling you about it for several weeks now. It's coming up on the 4th and 5th of March, and there's been some last-minute updates to the website, one or two new events added to the schedule. So simply go to the swlfest.com. That's swlfest.com. You need to go on there and register. It will be a virtual event run on the Zoom platform. There will be a virtual hospitality room open for the weekend as well. And it is only $10 for all of the activities of the two-day event. So do go to the website, swlfest.com, register, and get ready for 2 days jam-packed of lots of interesting radio information. And everybody is looking forward to it, and it is coming up very, very quickly. So you do want to get your registration in as soon as possible. It is a special day today.
Yes.
It is World Radio Day, February the 13th. We hope wherever you are that you or a radio station that you listen to or some station out around you is marking the occasion. On the occasion of World Radio Day 2022, UNESCO calls on radio stations worldwide to celebrate this event's 11th edition and more than a century of radio. This edition of World Radio Day is divided into three main sub-themes: trust in radio journalism, trust and accessibility, and trust and viability of radio stations. Now, we want to mark this occasion. We think we celebrate Radio Day almost every week, almost every day.
Pretty much.
But, you know, this is a special day to pay real attention to it and draw attention to radio. And in particular, right now, with so much misinformation flying around out there, trust is the main theme of this year's event. Now, the Director General of UNESCO, Ms. Audrey Azoulay, has issued a special message for today. So we thought we would read that as our sort of tribute to World Radio Day. She goes on to say, on this edition of World Radio Day, the theme of which is radio and trust, we are celebrating the independence and reliability of radio. We turn to radio more than any other medium when we need to be informed. For example, in Europe, where fewer than 1 in 5 people consider social networks a credible source of information, more than half of all people trust radio. This trust is all the more important under serious circumstances, as radio is the only medium which can reach so many households, especially in the remotest of areas. During a pandemic, radio thus remains one of the surest ways to know what to do without controversy confusing matters. Radio is often the medium through which learning continues when schools are closed. For example, in sub-Saharan Africa, while 3/4 of university students own a radio, only 30% have internet access at home. However, our trust in radio may be due to something even more profound. Where images can be distorted or reproduced to the point of excess, radio establishes a more direct, more intimate relationship between speaker and listener. Of course, this close relationship must be coupled with a guarantee of independence and rigor. Our organization sees to this by promoting reliable and quality information everywhere through support of press freedom for journalists. The best guarantee of radio's independence, however, is the diversity of those who make it and the diversity of their voices. Radio would not inspire such trust if we could not make it our own, regardless of our culture. While television requires more significant resources, radio offers communities, villages, and schools an accessible meaning of sharing their knowledge. UNESCO is encouraging radio projects, for example, in Cameroon, where an agreement to support community radio stations was signed in November. For trust is the product not only of a constant effort to be independent, but also of better representation of diversity in terms of language, gender, and ideas. Many radio stations have already taken up these issues. Whatever their audience ratings, they will have UNESCO's solid support. This February 13th, let us all join together to express how much radio means to us. A medium over 100 years old, radio is today more relevant than ever. May it live on for many more years to come.
Definitely one of the cheapest ways also to enjoy programs. And I think if we can trust radio more than many other mediums, and you know, with all the fake news on the internet and social media, I think it's a great way to continue in the future. And I think it shows us how powerful radio is also.
Yeah, I think the numbers are important that they show there, you know, with so many people who just take things for granted, internet available, high speed to everybody. Well, obviously not the case. It might be around us, but in many corners of the planet, it's just such a luxury, if not even an impossibility for some people. And we talk about the types of radios that are out there now, very inexpensive radios.
Absolutely.
That people can pick up that are powerful radios, shortwave radios. They can not only listen to their local stations, but listen to news and opinions and information from other parts of the world. So I think it's important that UNESCO and the United Nations have decided to mark this day and really focus attention on just what a powerful tool radio is. And as they say, may it live on for many more years to come.
Yep. And one word to all the broadcasters out there, to all the radio stations, focus on where and how your listeners are getting your programs. With all the talk of digital, remember that there are millions and millions of radios that still work very well, that might be even old radios that can get analog programs. And we've got to remember that, to have that voice on the radio reach as many people as possible. Well, a couple of weeks ago, we had an interesting story about a college radio station that wanted to set a Guinness World Record, and they actually did. This is by Susan Hasworth for Radio World. So on February 5th and 6th, 2022, two DJs at WJCU-FM on the campus of John Carroll University broke the Guinness World Record for longest consecutive radio interview. The program started at 7 a.m. on February 5th and ran live until 8:35 a.m. the next morning, capping a 25-hour, 35-minute-long interview. The program aired on 88.7 FM in Cleveland on Instagram Live via the WJCU radio app and on Twitch. The record-breaking event was led by two radio staff, Zachary Sinutko and Colin Kennedy, who serve as on-air personalities as well as executive producer and co-producer, respectively, of the station's hip-hop rap show, 808s and Mixtapes. The previous record was set on November 8, 2021 at Imal FM 90.2 in Kathmandu, Nepal, with 25 hours and 26 minutes long interview of Nepalese tourism expert Hang Fingjo Sherpa. It got hard in the middle of the night, but with the help of the community and the rest of the university, we did it, said Kennedy. Thank you to the school and to everyone who passed by the WJCU studio to help encourage us to do the unachievable. So, congratulations. I mean, that must have been probably long at some point, you know, after hours and hours and hours of chatting, but they just kept at it, and congratulations, they are now in the Guinness World Records.
I wonder if anybody actually listened to the whole thing, too. They should go into the book as well. I don't know. Could people listen to us for 25 hours plus? I don't know.
That's a good question. Well, some did.
And could we do it? There's a question. Or would we want to even?
Well, that's the first thing. You know, do we really want to do that, first of all?
Yeah. Anyways, congratulations to them. Happy to update that story. We have a special program coming up on Monday, February the 14th, from a station called Radio Emma Talk. And it's going to be a lot of different elements to this special broadcast. They are celebrating a radio event that took place, the station 2MT. They're going to be running even a video cast of this event as well. EmmaTalk.org is the place to go. That's EmmaTalk.org. Programming all day from 1100 UTC. Jim, one of the hosts, live broadcast will start at 1845 UTC. Radio Emma Talk is celebrating the centenary of the first 2MT broadcast with an online stream on Monday, the 14th of February. So this is tomorrow. The stream starts at 1100 with a program of audio and video telling the story of 2MT. The live program hosted by Jim Salmon, also a BDXC member, starts at 1845 when a glass will be raised to 2MT at 100. Full program details of the day are listed on their website. And 2MT was the first British radio broadcast. And this is why they are marking the 100th anniversary of that broadcast, the call sign 2MT. So this comes to us from BDXC Communications of February.
Oh, this is going to be interesting. And if you have never listened to a Emma Talk broadcast, do listen. They are very interesting, informative, lots to talk about radio.
Yep. So the website again, emmatalk.org. That's EmmaTalk.org. And you'll get all the information of how you can access the different aspects of the broadcast.
So what's happening with our son? Well, we had quite some activity this week with some small solar flares and coronal mass ejections that created pretty much a roller coaster this week of quiet conditions going into G1 class geomagnetic storms at times. Depending on the hours and the time that you were listening to the radio, you could have seen either bad conditions or great conditions or conditions that were changing quite rapidly. And it seems like what's going to happen is pretty much the same thing for the week ahead. Add to that that there's a coronal hole on the sun that will affect us with some solar wind reaching either today or tomorrow, February 14th. The solar flux around 112 sunspot number 78. So varying conditions is what we had and pretty much what we'll have in the week ahead. Let's hope there's more quiet conditions than not. But the best way to really take the pulse of propagation is to turn on that radio and listen.
This is Jeff Eichner of Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania, United States of America. Listen to the International Radio Report every Sunday morning at 10:30 on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
So we got some news that is not 100% clear. Actually, the only information we have comes from a Greek text that was translated. And the translations, we know what they are. They're okay, but they're not always perfect. It goes with a possible end to the Voice of Greece on shortwave. So this is from Zacharias Liangas to Glenn Hauser's World of Radio. Here it says in the text, direct shots against the government and the ERT, which is the Greek broadcaster. The ERT administration have been launched by PROSPERT, Panhellenic Federation of Television Associations of Radio and Television Companies. They accuse them of the abolition of the site which transmits the historic Voice of Greece broadcasts and the abolition of the corresponding broadcast center in Avlida, with parallel demolition of antennas in the broadcast centers of medium wave services in other spots. In the statement, they say that the shortwave broadcasting center, which is the only one in all of Greece, performs a crucial role in serving constitutional purpose of ERT and the transmission of its radio program throughout the world, which prospered and its workers kept open during the struggle against the Black Coup, ensuring both the transmission of the program and the equipment of ERT, which is public property of the Greek people. Great impression and concern for the security issues of the country is caused by the information of the administration in the form of a question to the Ministries of Defense and Foreign Affairs to decide for themselves if they wish to continue the operation of the service on their own responsibility. They go on to say that, in particular, the Avlida Broadcasting Center broadcasts, among others, the Voice of Greece, a historic radio station of international reach, which targets the 14 million Greek expatriates in Europe, USA, Canada, Australia, and to a large number of Greek workers outside the borders, such as seafarers and seagoing ships and truck drivers traveling around Europe. Pospert, recognizing the great importance of the operation of the Vryhon Broadcasting Center and the Voice of Greece, is maintaining links between the expatriate Greeks and their homeland, had over the years stressed the need to modernize and upgrade the facilities for the Broadcasting Center, and they are deploring the constant abandonment and undermining of its operations by both the ERT administration and the state. It goes on to say that basically what they want to do is to dismantle the medium wave broadcasting, and we kind of think of the Avlida shortwave broadcasting site at the same time. And this is where we, and there's something you can do actually to help maintain the Voice of Greece. The Voice of Greece on shortwave is one of those broadcasters that is pretty good, has a good signal here in North America. 9420 kilohertz is always great. Great Greek music, and a lot of people enjoy listening to that broadcast. There's something you can do, actually, to maybe help maintain the broadcast alive, and it's to write to them, to let them know, hey, we are listening, we like your programs, we think it's very important to keep a Greek voice on the air, and the Voice of Greece is an important aspect of knowing more about Greek culture and general also at the same time. The Voice of Greece at ert.jr is where you can send an email. It is, I think, something that everybody should take their 5 or 10 minutes. The broadcasts are going to end March the 31st. So it gives us a little bit of time to send in our comments. I've sent mine. I know a lot of people that follow my live shows have sent an email also. They've been confirming they've been sending their emails to support the Voice of Greece. And let's cross our fingers that things can change and that they can keep that alive.
Yeah, this is a government broadcaster, so the funding, of course, does come from the government. So they have to look at it and understand. I think in some cases, governments don't understand the international broadcasting. You know, they write a check and say, here, you know, do whatever it is that you do. So they have to be made aware, too, that, you know, there are people out there listening. Yeah. There are Greeks around the world who are probably tuning into that broadcast. They used to carry a number of different language services. They're still listed in the WRTH, but there have been irregularities with the service. And I think that might have something to do with the maintenance of the transmitters and the antennas. So, you know, it probably is something that they're looking at and thinking, well, you know, here's a way we can save some money pretty quickly. And, you know, we've seen this script played out in many other countries, unfortunately. So no guarantee that what you have to say is going to have an impact, but it doesn't cost anything to do it and get your opinion out to them and see how it all plays out in the end. We next go to Russia with some interesting radio-related story here. Russia initiates cross-border radio broadcasts in the North's languages. This comes from the TASS News Service via the SW Elling blog in St. Petersburg. TASS is reporting the International Consortium for the Preservation of Arctic Cultural Heritage, based at the Russian State Hydrometeorology University, initiated a cross-border radio broadcast in languages of the North's indigenous peoples, the university's representative in Moscow told TASS. An application for the broadcast has been filed with the Arctic Council. The application must be filed from two countries, and we plan to go along with Norway, with the Sami radio station, which is a part of Norway's big television and radio concern. The idea has been supported at all levels. As for the cross-border broadcast, we probably will begin from the shortwave broadcasts, as it covers bigger territories and is less costly. At the initial stage, the pilot broadcast will be organized on the territories of Finland, Norway, and Russia. The project's initiators are ready to cooperate with other countries. One transmitter in Krasnoyarsk may cover 80% of the Russian north. Norway has such a transmitter, which covers the Scandinavian territory. Another two transmitters are in Alaska, he continued. Later on, the broadcast will also be on medium wave and long wave. Thus, one frequency will carry three or four channels, he added. One of them will be in Russian and English, and the rest in languages of the indigenous peoples. The audiences will learn about traditions, skills of the people living in the north. The content will fully focus on culture. The countries participating in this project will open newsrooms. We hope the General Center, which will coordinate the project, will be at the Arctic Council. The International Consortium for the Preservation of Arctic Culture Heritage includes St. Petersburg Committee on the Arctic, the Arctic Museum and Exhibition Center in St. Petersburg, the Association of Indigenous Low-Numbered Peoples of the North, Siberia, and Far East, and others. This is pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah.
We haven't had a lot of news to report about brand new services, particularly using shortwave. Also, that three countries are going to be cooperating together on this, serving people of the high north in the three different regions. So a really positive story, and I think this will be something that will be attractive, not just to those people in the north, but to people who listen to shortwave in general. So we'll be waiting to get more information about this as to when they're up and running, where the transmissions are, frequencies, and all that sort of thing. So a really positive story. Glad to be able to report that one.
Yeah, definitely. And especially, targeting these communities up in the north. So we have a story about seven that were injured, one seriously in armed attack on Guinea-Bissau radio station. This is via Reporters Without Borders. Reporters Without Borders is appalled by an attack by masked gunmen on Capital FM, a radio station in Bissau, the capital of Guinea-Bissau, in which seven people, including three of its journalists, were injured. The authorities must quickly identify those responsible, RSF says. One of the journalists is still in serious condition in Bissau's military hospital with spine and rib injuries that she sustained during the attack on the privately owned pro-opposition radio station, which was carried out at around 11 a.m. on February 7th, by masked men wearing military uniforms and armed with Kalashnikovs. The gunmen opened fire, ransacked the premises, and destroyed all the equipment they found. Two other Capital FM journalists were injured in the attack. One has an arm broken, and the other sustained a foot injury. Technicians and other employees were also injured. The attack came 6 days after a failed coup attempt in Guinea-Bissau on February 1st, in which 11 people were killed. While all other radio stations kept broadcasting after the coup attempt, Capital FM, which is known for being very critical of the government and sympathetic to the opposition, closed for 6 days as a safety measure. The station had just resumed broadcasting when the attack took place. A popular radio station, widely regarded as sympathetic to the opposition, African Party for the Independence of Guinea and Cape Verde, Capital FM has often been threatened in the past. Gunmen stormed into the station and destroyed much of its equipment in a previous attack on July 26, 2020. Yep. An investigation was opened, but the perpetrators were never identified. Guinea-Bissau is ranked 95th out of 180 countries in RSF's 2021 World Press Freedom Index. So that shows you that sometimes some people are putting their lives at risk for talking about their viewpoints, especially in Africa in general. There's a lot of difficulty in expressing your viewpoints against you know, governments.
It's interesting that the other stations, all other stations in the country were allowed to continue broadcasting through all of that. Yet this one in particular, being an opposition broadcaster, I guess, decided, we better calm down here for a little bit.
Yep.
And then, of course, once they opened up, the attack happened immediately. So it's showing the importance of, you know, either getting the word out or trying to stop getting the word out by the people who don't want those words being put out over the radio.
So we have upcoming ham radio contests.
There are a few coming up for the week. First off, we have the PODXS070 Club Valentine Special. This is coming up tomorrow, February 14th, for 24 hours, 0100 to 2359 Zulu, organized by that club. The object is to work as many stations as possible during a six-hour block within the day's transmissions. The bands are only 40, 80, and 160 meters, and this is strictly a PSK31 contest.
There's the ARRL School Club Roundup, 13 Zulu, February 14th, 2359 Zulu, February 18th, organized by the American Radio Relay League. The object is to have school-based amateur radio club stations work other club stations. A station may operate no more than 6 hours in a 24-hour period, and a maximum of 24 hours in the 107-hour event. Bands, all amateur bands except 60, 30, 17, and 12 meters are permitted. CW and phone contacts.
We have the NTC QSO Party, 1900 to 2000, a one-hour contest only, February 17th. Organized by the Netherlands Telegraphy Club. The purpose of our QSO party is to stimulate activity and practice CW in and around the Netherlands. So it's on 80, 40, and 20 meters, and of course, CW only.
And finally, the ARRL International DX Contest, CW from 0 Zulu, February 19th to 2359 Zulu, February 20th, organized by the American Radio Relay League. Bands 1.8, 3.5, 7, 14, 21, and 28 megahertz, CW only.
All right. Lots of activity going on, lots of stories. We will put links to most of these up on our Facebook page, so go and check them out there. And we do invite you to send along stories for us as well through the Facebook page is probably the easiest way to do it. Or you can email us radioreport@yahoo.com. So we continue to celebrate. We hope you are celebrating World Radio Day wherever you are. And celebrate radio every day. Don't just leave it to one day. We will celebrate this day in particular, but remember that radio is important every day. And keep listening. That's the best thing you can do. Have a great week, everybody. We'll talk to you again next week on the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
Bye-bye.
This is Athens. You are listening to the voice of Greece.
Let's welcome Mr. Richie Haven.
guitar of Mike, please. Guitar Mike.